Opinions expressed in the following program are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the staff or management of KLAV.
This is Gambling with an Edge with Bob Dancer and Frank Nealon. Frank is the author of The Secret World of Video Poker Progressives, available at his website, ProgressiveVP.com, and is a former manager of the largest Las Vegas progressive slot team and has over 20 years of gambling experience. Bob Dancer is the best-known video poker player and writer in the country today, with more books than we can mention. Bob's won more than $1 million during a six-month period and has taught video poker at several casinos. To check out Bob's products, visit BobDancer.com. So if you're a Vegas local or are planning a trip here, this is one show you don't want to miss, because we'll be teaching you how to gamble with an edge. Now, here's Bob and Frank.
Hello, and welcome to the Bob Dancer, Frank Nealon Cocktail Waitress Showcase. All cocktail waitresses, all the time. So Bob, who's our bodacious, beauteous babes tonight?
For Frank, this show is not about female body parts. So,
well, you could put that past the people on VP Free.
Yeah, well, they do seem to write about that, but there are other shows that they can go do for that, but this one's going to be about gambling.
Well, tonight, anyway, we will be having some cocktail waitresses on a future show, and by the way, VP Free says that we've boosted their membership.
Good. I'm not sure if that's us or you, but I do know that the VP Free membership is up. And it has to do with a fallacy you're going to talk about later. So we don't know what the cause is.
We're not going to have time to do the team training techniques tonight, are we?
I don't think so. We might a paragraph or two at the end, depending on how it goes. We have two very interesting interviews tonight. I'm excited about both of them. Frank and I have been building up these questions to ask these, and we're trying to limit them to 12 minutes for each. And I got a feeling they're going to go to 40 minutes, and we obviously that's not going to happen. So we're going to see.
All right, let me at least tell them what they're going to be missing. So on a coming up show, we are going to talk about team training techniques, which were things that my team developed, mostly my mother, who was a master teacher, for dealing with particular types of errors. Errors do not come in a single flavor. Different video poker players make different types of errors, and the fix for each error type is extremely different. Nothing, you know, like night and day. So we will be talking about that in an upcoming show. If I've teased anybody, I apologize. Do you want to get straight to listener questions?
Yeah, I do. And actually, I'm looking forward to these team training techniques. I may steal some of them, start teaching them.
Well, my mother was brilliant.
Good.
Beyond brilliant. Six languages, 168 IQ, and the nicest gal you'd ever want to meet. All right. This first question is not actually from a single listener. It's I've actually received about 8 questions within the last month about how to select a machine, when to know if you should switch games, what games are the most fun, etc. And I think this ties in very, very nicely with what Gambling Edge is about, right? You
said
attitude, methodology, right?
Attitude, methodology, and knowledge.
Now, this particular one is about the most important, I think, secret to the pro mentality. So, first, what all these questions had in common is that they imply that choice is a factor. I don't particularly think it is. It's pure math, and as much as we would like 2 plus 2 to equal what we would like it to, it's always going to equal 4. Now, why don't you give the folks a brief explanation of how you pick machines?
Well, I do have choice. When I'm asked what my favorite machine is, or favorite game to play, I use a football example for, like, when Peyton Manning was asked which is his favorite receiver, the answer was he wants the guy who's open this time and unguarded this time. So I'm looking at the combination of the game, the casino, the promotions, how much I have to do to get my monthly mailer, blah, 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 blah. But I'm adding it all up. There are some choice elements in there, such as if the money is the same, I prefer Deuces Wild to Super Double Bonus as a personal preference. I love Quick Quads. With a promotion with a good game in Quick Quads, I might be willing to give up a few hundredths of a percent compared to certain other games. So there are some choices there. But not major. Mainly it's which one gives me the highest dollars per hour.
Now, if you have walked into a casino and you have made your choice on a machine.
Yes.
Would you switch for any reason?
Yes.
And what would that reason be?
Somebody with a cigar sat down next to me. There was a redhead over there. It was double points until midnight, and the clock just struck midnight. The machines were malfunctioning. There's a limit to the number of bonuses you can collect in a day, and I have collected all of them.
Something would have to change, though, for you to move.
Yes. Yeah, the conditions would have to be different. I usually, it's very rare that I walk into a casino having no idea which game I'm going to play.
All right. Well, now let me give you a little insight into how I did it and we did it.
Okay.
We did not really choose what machines to play. What we did is we set parameters, mathematical parameters,
mm-hmm.
on risk, bankroll requirement, percentage return, standard deviation, all the standard stuff that you would do with mathematical equations. We then crunched the numbers on the machines in any given casino where we felt that there were multiple plays. Obviously, if a casino only had one, then we played that one. But in a casino where there was more than one thing to do, we would crunch the numbers. And the numbers would tell us which was the best game we should play.
Okay.
And then we played that completely dispassionately, never switched unless a button started malfunctioning or, you know, something very significant changed. They canceled the promotion, or we didn't really play promotions. We played mostly high progressives. So it was we did set up the equations, and obviously how much risk you're willing to take, that's a matter of choice. Maybe I always played with something that was at least one hundredth of a percent chance of going bust. So about a 1 in 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked minimum of 2% edges. You know, we had these various parameters.
Good.
But we just stuck to the math. So my suggestion, and you may, you know, correct me on this, is for the folks out there, is crunch the numbers, stick with your choice, and there is a bonus to doing that. If you let the numbers guide you, it is far, far less stressful. Because you can basically disenfranchise yourself from the results. You didn't do what you wanted to do. You did what the math said was right.
Not sure everybody knows how to do that, certainly. I don't. Let's go on to the next question.
All right. Next question. Try not to laugh now too much, Bob.
All right.
This was an interesting email about Bob's recent play at the M.
All right.
It's actually a bit too long to read the whole thing.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to withhold the name. But I have summarized the three key points. Are you ready, Bob?
Well, this has to do with my point challenge at the M, where I was trying to earn a car worth $40,000, and I ended up losing $70,000 in the process.
That is correct.
Uh-huh. I wrote about this on the January 25th issue. You can find it on bobdancer.com if you want to know the details of what they're talking about.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Now I'm going to read this slow so people can get it.
Uh-huh.
These are the three key points of the email.
Uh-huh.
Bob clearly made a mistake playing at the M in the points challenge.
Okay, how's
that? And I would not be saying this even if he had won.
Even if I'd won.
Okay. And okay. I know this for sure because of his result.
Oh, because I lost, it was a bad play.
But even if you had won.
Yeah.
Okay, well, basically, I've actually done a little bit of experimentation with dimensional travel and tried to go to a universe where this makes sense. That hasn't been working for me. Now, I don't want to joke about this too much because the writer almost certainly has what's known as a cognitive distortion. In this case, outcome bias. Would you like to explain that, Bob?
Well, basically, you have to wait till something's over to decide whether or not you should have done it in the first place, which is a pretty stupid way to make decisions. You can't, when you're making a decision in gambling, you have to decide before you know the result what it's going to be. So you can have it be correct every step along the way. The outcome, sometimes good, sometimes bad. If you keep making your right decisions, you're going to have good outcomes in the end.
Do you know where outcome biases are actually very, very common?
All right. Where?
Medical industry. People hold doctors responsible when patients die, even if they performed a surgery which, for instance, has a 90% chance of success, and the patient without it would have had a 100% chance of dying. You can't hold someone responsible for a decision based on the outcome because you have to go back in time and put yourself in their head at the time they were making the decision, which was obviously prior to playing. So in summary, I would just like to say, if you think Bob's decision to play at the M was flawed, and you are including his results, good or bad, in that judgment, you're crazy. On a good side, it's a very common, mild kind of crazy, and nothing your dog would hate you for.
Oh, good. I'm glad. So actually, I'm scouring the Smart Money book, because there's a line that Connick says definitely about this. And I don't have a quote in front of me, but basically it says you're going to have your ups and downs, and they're going to be painful along the way, and inevitably they're going to lead to a nice, big, juicy fortune. And so he said it in a way that I've been preaching that for years, and, mm-hmm. I highly believe it. So this was down, but I don't know if we're going to have time to talk more about this particular subject after the interviews. But we're going to do a commercial first, and then we're going to talk to Michael Connick. Did you have something quick?
I had something quick.
All right.
We had a question last week on how much money people bring to Las Vegas, and I had some very interesting new information on it. Too much to say on air. I'm going to post the answer to that on the website as a PDF. And I spoke to the Las Vegas Convention Bureau about it. So that'll be on the website. Also,
we're going to know that the average person comes in with $463.23 or some such number.
$467. Get your facts right, Bob.
Damn.
Okay. Right. In last month, I received not less than a dozen emails refuting the randomness of machines. Now, that's not really that unusual. What was passing strange is that to refute the randomness of machines, people have been offering to me textbook examples of randomness as arguments against it. They have gone on to explain what they expect from a random machine and have, in fact, given the textbook examples for non-randomness.
Why don't you tell us what you're talking about here?
Well, actually, what I'd like to do is save this for next week.
What this says
to me is that there's a major, major disconnect between the word random and people's understanding of its meaning. Since we are having the chairman of the Gaming Control Board on today, and he confirmed today, by the way.
Good. Marco Liparelli. I'm very looking forward to that.
And our major question for him is about the guaranteed randomness of machines. So I think we should save answering that until next week, but I wanted to whet everyone's appetite, because that's a big one.
It is. And random is not the same as fair. And we'll talk about what the difference between random and fair. You can be very, very random and unfair, and which is the case you're talking.
Why are you looking at me, Bob?
You're looking. I don't know why I'm looking at you. Do you want me to do a commercial or you want to do one?
Why don't you go first?
All right. Let me talk about South Point. South Point is one of our sponsors, and it's the casino that holds my classes every Tuesday, beginning at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in the showroom. This coming Tuesday, the class is 9-5 Super Double Bonus. This is a 99.695 game when played appropriately, and it's frequently greater than 100% when you include in slot club and promotions. This week, about 30,000 players at the South Point got a postcard with extra free play. What the gist of this free play promotion is it if you come in and collect on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and play $15 a free play through, you also get an equivalent amount on Friday or Saturday. So if you collect all eight of those, it's $120. It's been talked a lot on VP Free, and generally what's been said on VP Free about this promotion has been wrong. What is wrong about it is this is not your monthly free play. You get your monthly free play in addition to this. This is an addition to your free play. This is a special promotion. So if you play on Tuesday or Wednesday, you can pick up the $15 bonus at the same time you pick up your free play. And the ones on the weekends take extra trips. Now, it's possible that $15 at a time isn't enough to justify an extra trip. And if so, I understand, because each of us needs to set limits on how much our time is worth. However, if you do go in to pick up your free play, make sure you don't hit and run, meaning just pick up the $15 and head out the door. I'm not positive on this, but I believe the South Point is one of those casinos that look for such a behavior, and when they find it, they remove the players from future promotions of this type. It's possible I'm wrong on this, but I personally don't recommend you chance it. Also, this coming weekend, those of us who have given them their email address get an extra $25. So if you haven't gone in and do that, let's go. And give them your email address.
We now have Michael Connick on the line. He has been writing gambling and other books, magazine articles, for more than 15 years. The first book title that I saw sounds like a Jerry Springer show or maybe a National Enquirer headline. It was called The Man with the $100,000 Breast. But it's actually a collection of very interesting magazine columns, and I recommend it. The book we're going to talk about tonight is called Smart Money. It's a memoir based on working as an assistant for the Brain Trust Sports Betting Combine for a few years in the late 1990s. Although Michael Connick was already a knowledgeable gambling author when he started the gig, he gets his eyes opened by this adventure, and so does the reader. Welcome, Michael Connick, to Gambling with an Edge with Bob Dancer and Frank Nealon. Are you there?
Gentlemen. Yes, I am. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good.
That wasn't an appropriate welcome. How to parts? How's our director of milk and 4-4 today?
Well done. Good accent there.
Well, thank you.
All right. So Frank put on a Texas accent because after we announced this interview on several places and on a VP Free, a man named Mickey Krim, who will be a guest here, although we haven't confirmed exactly when, suggested that Billy Walters was the actual person that you called Rick Matthews in your book. I went to YouTube.com, looked at the Billy Walters 60-minute interview. I recommend that for other people to do. And I have to agree, Rick and Billy are the same person. Do you care to confirm or deny this?
Well, you wouldn't be the first person to ask, and I will respectfully continue to say I can neither confirm nor deny the real identities of any of the people in the book.
All right.
Other than myself.
All right, good.
It was me.
Good, it was you, and so we accept that. We'll call him Rick Matthews the rest of the book, but Frank and I have both put the probability that Rick and Billy are the same, somewhere in excess of 99.9%. So.
But I'm not betting on it because I'm not much of a gambler.
All right. So this particular book starts off, you're interviewing Rick Matthews for an article you're writing, maybe for Cigar Aficionado. You wrote for them for a long time. And an off-the-cuff comment, you asked him if you were if he would consider hiring you to work for him. And he said yes, and that started a 3-4 year sports betting joyride. Real highs, real lows. If you had to do it over again, would you have gone to work for Rick?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the most educational, profound, and exciting chapters of my life. After meeting Rick Matthews and getting to be a part of that world for a few years, I understood that it was a world I didn't want to live in for the rest of my life, but it was also a world that I think many of us fantasize about and wonder about. The life of a high roller, the life of someone who actually gets the better of the casinos and the bookmakers, and the whole element of cat and mouse and matching wits with some pretty sharp people in the gambling business and getting a gigantic reward for the enormous amount of work put into the prospect was just a thing I'm really glad I did.
We have never fantasized about that, have we, Bob?
Well, for me, I had at about the same time I was in the mansion at the MGM, and I had my own version of this high roller life that I wrote my book about. And actually, I wouldn't mind going back to that. But oh well, Michael, I was surprised at how much of your work when you're working for Rick was sitting around. You'd just spend all day in the sports book checking to see if the line moved from, say, 6 points to 6.5. And if it did move, you instantly made a maximum bet. And if it didn't move, you frequently skipped betting on the game. How much of intelligent sports betting would you say is like shopping or just waiting for the lines to change and then bouncing?
Well, I think it's very much like your expertise, Bob, video poker. You look at a pay table, and if the numbers don't say what you know they need to say for you to play the game, you don't play the game. you're not there for action. You're there to gain a demonstrable edge. And that was one of the profound lessons that I learned from my sports betting years. It is indeed all about shopping for those magic half points, because when you add up all these tiny edges, if you have enough of them, you end up stacking up a lot of change.
And you actually had dead time in your business.
Well, but it was active dead time. He was sitting there wasting time.
Sitting there watching
the... Watching the lines move. It was important. He had to be there.
You're lucky. We used to dream of having free time.
Lucky. I like it.
All right. What's the for Yorkshireman accent? Anyway.
What makes for a good sports book, Michael?
Low juice.
Low juice meaning?
A discount from the standard minus 110 to win 100. A book that puts up lines on every game, including the ones that they think the bettor might actually know a bit more about than they do, but they put it up anyway. I think in my utopian fantasy of the perfect sports book, they would honor the same limits for everyone in a very democratic way. So if they are willing to give the Saudi guy who, plays $100,000 a hand on Baccarat a $200,000 a game limit on NFL, then I would like to see them give that same limit to everyone else.
Yeah, I have those fantasies about video poker too. If they allow somebody else to play this game with a 3% edge, they ought to let me play it too.
It's a nice dream, isn't it?
Good. Frank has a question about perceptions.
Yeah. Apparently, line makers actually include public perception in their calculations. Like if people like a game or feel that a game is strong. Isn't that one of the better opportunities for profits in sports betting when the public perception is divergent from reality?
I think that's one of the key things that sharp guys look for. Now, we have to qualify this. In some sort of minor conference college basketball game, the bookies and the line makers don't care what the public thinks. They know they're only putting up a line for sharp bettors.
When Morehead State plays or something.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But in the highly public kind of contest, particularly in something like NFL, where all information is known to everyone at all times, playing contrarian to the public and the media is a winning move.
Very interesting.
Now, Frank also has a large open-ended question, and that we're going to let go until the end. We got a quickie one because we're going to cut you off at the end. First of all, do you want to tell us about your website or any upcoming projects that we should know about? And then we're going to let Frank go with you until the end of the time.
Well, folks can keep up with me at my website, michaelkoenig.com. It's just my name. I'm real excited. Our friends at Huntington Press.
Yes, Anthony Curtis.
Starting a new Anthony Curtis.
He's great.
He really is. He's one of the real solid guys in Vegas, one of the people you can always count on, a real straight shooter. Well, he and his longtime editorial lieutenant, Dee Castleman, are launching a new fiction imprint. And I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to steal their thunder, but I will tell you I'm going to be a part of it, and I'm really excited to work with them.
Wow, that's super.
Oh, well, good. I actually, they're one of my publishers, and I didn't know this, so I will be on the phone to Anthony.
Do you know
Anthony? Conic blew it, and now tell me, because I want to do that too. I'm actually going to steal another question.
Okay.
When I last talked to Michael 3 or 4 years ago, I modestly suggested that he should write about me. At that time, Michael, you told me that you were kind of giving up gambling writing and were going to concentrate on making music in the Los Angeles area. How's that? Is that still what you're doing, and how's that going?
Yeah, that's true, Bob. I have a little independent jazz and blues label called Free Ham Records, and I have a small, lovable roster of super talented people, and it's been a beautiful thing. It's been a beautiful way to take all the, you could say, soiled money from my gambling years
And launder it.
This
is a good subject for a gambling show.
See, this is going to tie in great with my final question. Do you know anything about what caused the cell phones to be banned and later came be allowed back into sports books?
Well, I have not been back since they allowed them back in, so I don't know about the second part, but the first part was simply because all the big syndicates had runners just
of which you were one.
Yeah. But we don't know why suddenly that became okay.
No, and I was out of it. When I was still in it, it never was okay, and this is now news to me. So
You should call in more often, Michael. You'll learn things.
Yeah, I walked through a casino with my cell phone, and I realized, oh, God, I'm in the sports book, and the security guard said, no, it's no problem. And I'm like, what? All right, I better get this big question in. Now, this one's going to be pretty existential, so here we go. I was very surprised and shocked to read in the foreword of your book that you completely acknowledge the fact that America is obsessed with the bouncing of balls. To quote you, people are obsessed with betting on sports, particularly the bounce of a ball. You also went on to say outcome is inconsequential to the course of world events without betting. And you said betting keeps spectators fixated on otherwise meaningless contests. Now, I had no idea about this sort of stuff until I walked into work at January 14th, 2005. Does that date mean anything to you?
It's the day before my birthday.
All right. Anyway, I asked my coworkers innocently, did we make it? And I received the answer, yeah, I think we won by 6 points. Now, why this is really funny is because what I was asking about is if the Huygens probe had landed safely on Titan. a first in human history. And what I got instead was a sports score. I like that you're laughing. I went on.
He's laughing at his own writing.
I went on to ask 7 more of my coworkers, and none of them, the big donut hole zero, had even heard of the Huygens probe, but half of them knew the local basketball score. So here is my question. What force do you think is driving the world's obsession with sports? Are we doing it to ourselves, or is it the modern equivalent of bread and circuses and a deliberate attempt on the powers that be to keep the populace subdued, appeased, and distracted from truly relevant things?
Well, how long do I have to reply?
One minute and 37 seconds.
3 minutes. You got 3 minutes.
Well, here's the short answer is the latter, and what you said, Frank, is right on.
Thank you.
This is our bread and circuses, and moreover, this is also our Roman Colosseum filled with gladiators and Christians and lions. These people...
Betting on the lions was a smart bet, by the way.
People, we live in a enormously violent culture and violent civilization, and athletics, particularly these contact sports, seem to be a way to sublimate a lot of these violent impulses. And moreover, if you want to get, this is just speculative, but I think the sheer beauty of our athletes, mm-hmm. their physical beauty is, there's something sexual but safely sexual about it, that they are merely objects of aesthetic pleasure, and they're just nice to look at in their uniforms and their gleaming muscles.
Nadia Comaneci was always my favorite.
I remember her, 1976.
I was a little boy. I had a major crush. And I love sports, by the way. I play sports. I watch sports. I just don't think we're in balance. That's my only issue. I'm not a sports hater, folks out there in Radio Land. I love sports. But when all your coworkers know the local basketball score and don't know that we just landed a probe on one of the outer planets' moons, a first in human history, I just think that that's crazy. Don't you? Don't you?
Yeah. Well, and I do think that the status quo, the power structure, the establishment has a vested interest in having a populace that is better versed on the batting average of the Yankees reserve second baseman than they are who their elected representative is.
I don't know. Well, I don't know who the reserves Yankees.
Do we have Beth on?
Go. We're going to do one commercial. Michael, thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to run. We could continue this, and we'll get you on again. And would you mind if we went back and talked about some of your older books down the road, which are also sports related, not quite as new as this one? But we'd love to talk about them if you're willing to talk about them with us.
I'd be delighted, and thank you for your thoughtful questions.
Very good. Thank Michael Connick.
Thank you so much. I don't pronounce the K in my last name, by the way.
Good night, guys.
Well,
All right.
Let me tell you a little bit about Silverton. Silverton's one of our sponsors. This month they're having a scratcher promotion where they put four cards on the wall, and if you play 500 points, you your score depends on what you match. Today, the cards on the wall, and they still are until midnight, 6, 6, 8, and 10. So if you draw another six, it's a three of a kind, you get $15, two pair is $10, and if you get nothing, there's a pair in the hand, you get $5. Not big money, but it takes $500 to do it, so that's 1, 2, or 3%. Today, I had two draws, one because I got $10 for two pair, and the other one was a scratcher they sent me in the mail because I'm a regular player there. And on that one, I drew a six, which sort of is three of a kind, except it actually matched one of the sixes in the card. So my final hand had two sixes of hearts in it. So I wasn't sure if that was three of a kind or a misdeal. But they paid me the $15, and so I'm cool. But it's still going to midnight, so if you want your guaranteed $5 or up to $15, that's what they have. Next week, they're going to have a Pots of Gold promotion with a leprechaun theme. So... to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in March. So they have drawings every Saturday night in March, and they have a final drawing, last chance drawing, on Thursday, March 31st at 7:30, which is a mistake because the entire world's going to be listening to our show live at that time, so there's no reason to have a drawing at that time.
Do you get to steal his Lucky Charms?
Ah, that's good. But on the off chance you're at that drawing instead of intelligence staying at home and listening to Gambling with an Edge, we do have archive shows on both ProgressiveVP.com and BobDancer.com. They also have 500 points a week starting on the week of Tuesday through Monday. You get a Sunbeam pot or pan. So I looked it up on the internet to see what this is worth, and the whole set is selling for $56. So you spend that over four times, so that's $10 a piece or something like that, which is it's better than a logo hat. Very good. So,
did you want me to talk about the palms real quick, or should we get straight to Beth?
Why don't you talk about the palm, so that way it's a little bit easier to figure out how much time we have with Beth.
And you wanted me to talk about the food, right?
Yeah.
The food.
And I normally talk about gambling promotions, and well, Frank cares more about food than I do, so I'm going to let him talk about the food at the palms.
Look, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. You eat and sleep, too. Don't deny it. I've seen you. Okay. Neil Simon reference for anyone out there. The Palms. Now, the Palms, just, you can't even say that they have, like, one good restaurant. They're all wonderful. My personal favorite is Little Buddha's because the price is right and the food quality is just off the scale. If you do go there, I strongly recommend trying the Drunken Whale Sake. I also recommend the Hamachi Yellowtail if you can have a little spicy. And the Spider Rolls. I don't know why, but they make them better than anyone else. And you can get steaks there, too. So if you're taking somebody... Yes?
I just wonder if they're real spiders in the spider roll.
No. It's soft-shelled cram, and it's deep-fried, so it's not even raw. But they also have steaks there. So if you wanted to go with somebody that doesn't like Japanese food or sushi, they've got a good mix of dishes there. Now, Simon's is also one of my favorite restaurants. They grow all their own herbs in-house, and you can actually go and, like, browse around inside the herb garden and they're very health-minded, so it's very, very healthy food.
And Simon's is in the Palms Place, which is the condo development right attached to the...
Yes, you do need to pack a lunch to get there.
It is. Well, it's a schlep, but it's sort of an easy walk, depending on how ambulatory you are.
That is true. Their flagship restaurant, for anyone that hasn't eaten there, is Nove. It's Italian-themed, but it's got quite a broad amount of cuisine. And I've only eaten there 3 times now. If you like calamari, you must try the calamari appetizer. But be careful you don't eat all of it. It is a bit spicy, and you'll just not want to even have your dinner. It's amazing. I'll give you more on their entrees later because I'm going to be eating there again next week. 9 Steakhouse. Just ate there for the very, very first time. And I had the bone-in steak special, which is kind of their premier dish with a side of mushrooms. And they had real 25-year-aged balsamic dressing for it. I mean, it was just amazing. So I promised I'd talk about that. But those are the highlights. Obviously, the buffet is great, and all the restaurants are.
We'll do this again because you have more to say about all their restaurants, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Beth Reamer. She has written Lay the Favorite, which is a laugh-out-loud, sexy sports betting memoir. Her book was set maybe 5 years later than Michael Connick's, who we just spoke to, but it's a world apart. Beth writes in the third person, such as Beth did such and such, rather than I did such and such. And she comes across as very pleasantly off the wall. She is the first in-room stripper I've ever knowingly spoke to. So, welcome Beth Reamer to Gambling with an Edge with Bob Dancer and Frank Nealon.
Hi.
I was given this book by somebody who hadn't read it first. He just sends me books that he thinks I'd like, and this time he was dead on. Now, one of the lines jumped out at me, and you were describing the gambler's bookshop. And you said, the bookshop was stocked with information on how to beat any casino or gambling system ever devised. It also carried novels like Sex, Lies, and Video Poker, and do-it-yourself divorce kits. Now, although you did include... You forget to include the words written by Bob Dancer. I was delighted to see the name of my book in somebody else's work. So, did you actually read the novel or just get a kick out of the title?
I didn't read your book. I'm sorry. But I thought the title was very clever.
Good. Actually, that was made up by Deke Castleman, who we referred to about 10 minutes ago. I thought it was real clever, too. Good.
It's a good novel, as long as you take notes on the side.
Rick, I want to give our audience a sense of the couple of lines I laughed at. I referred to a few different lines in my review that I wrote last November. And so if you go to bobdancer.com and look at the articles in the November, you can see a review of Lay the Favorite. Now, this first line... You have to be sick or politically incorrect or totally insensitive to laugh at. Idea, when I first read it, I was drinking a cup of water and I spit the water halfway across the room. So I'm not sure if I was, which of those I was, but maybe all of them. Now, one of her bosses and friends was a man she called Dink, which is a pretty cool name for a character. But anyway, various times Dink was a bookie and sometimes a big sports bettor. Dink had never thought about ever quitting gambling, but he'd go to Gamblers Anonymous meetings to people watch, which I thought is curious. So she wrote about this from this people watching from Dink's point of view, and what she said was, all these people thought they were smart. Then they lost all of their money. And I decided they were sick, or they decided they were sick. Dink wondered why they didn't decide they were stupid. I laughed hard on that.
I see. I think I see a new show topic in our future, but I'm going to withhold further comment.
Good. It will be. It will be in the future. All right. Another one. One of the Dink's employees ripped him off, stole big money. And your reaction in the book, Beth, was outrage, although modified a bit by practical considerations. There are 2 words in your text which I've changed for the air. I'm not going to tell you which 2 those are. And that was, We should have you killed, you fat blank, Beth yelled. Dink intervened. We can't kill Bruce just because he robbed my gambling money. Beth vented. I cannot. I will not stay in this office and sit across from some fat blank-blank degenerate thief who makes the same amount of money as me. I thought that was cute.
Or so apparently, were you willing to let Bruce steal from Dink if you made more money?
Well, I wasn't letting anyone steal from Dink. I had no control over that. I think my point in writing that was when Dink rehired employees who stole from him, it really brought down the office morale. And there came a point when there was basically no incentive not to steal from him. And plus, just being new to the business, that was something I found shocking, how common it was to steal, but also how easily you were forgiven when you did.
That is strange, and I've seen that in Vegas businesses before. I've had an employer say to me, and I've never stolen from an employer, but he walked out the door and said, listen, just try not to steal too much.
Yeah.
And he meant it.
Was that in Vegas?
That was in Vegas. I'm going to go ahead and withhold the name of the employer, but people that know me are going to...
I think in Vegas this happens so often that, yeah, people have that outlook. Like, they think they're going to steal, so just don't steal a lot.
I was also, that same job, I was actually demoted for not doing cocaine, which I thought was really unusual. We should get this out of the way before we run out of time. Several places in the book, you indicate that you didn't think you were very smart. You're laughing. However, from the book jacket, we know that you received a master's degree in Columbia University, one of the premier Ivy League schools in the country. You were awarded a Fulbright scholarship. Even more prestigious. And clearly, you're very bright. Now, what my high school friends would have probably called you is a B&B, which is bright and beautiful. By the way, Bob is a B3.
I don't know what that... I don't think I want to know what a B3 is.
That's bright and big bankrolled.
That could be worse. Okay.
Yes, I'm a B+, but I'm not willing to say what that means. Okay. Anyway, as charming and as self-deprecation might be, it seems you might need a dose of self-confidence, and I think I could give it to you. So here's my pitch. It's brief. You boxed. I was a kickboxer. I sword fight to this day. We both had jobs in gambling. We're both book authors, and I don't know if size is important to you, but I have an extremely large corpus callosum and oversized inferior parietal lobe. So what do you say?
I knew it.
What do you say? Dinner one of these days?
What?
Dinner? Can we do dinner?
Good. I'll let Beth respond to that if she wants, Frank. I don't... Well, we really didn't invite her here to fill up your social calendar.
She's the prettiest guest we've ever had. Can I? My show, too.
Well, you had one during my... You had a topless dancer.
Yes, but I don't date dancers.
Oh, well, that's good. All right. Anyway, I have another question for her.
Okay.
At the end of the book, you actually rip some guy off for a large amount of money. For the record, he deserved it. It was payback time. Now... You're presenting this book as nonfiction other than a change of the names of people other than yourself. So admitting you ripped somebody off would have the potential for getting various police agencies kind of involved. Now, it took a lot of balls to write that you ripped somebody off. Any comment on this? Have you been arrested yet on this?
Well, I'm glad to hear you think you deserved it. But basically, in my mind, I wasn't necessarily ripping him off. I was taking back what he owed me. I mean, I did business with him. I paid him when he won, and then he lost, and he did everything he could to try to get out of paying me.
Yes, he did.
He blackmailed me. He bullied me. So when the opportunity finally presented itself, a chance for me to get back the money.
Plus a little extra.
Well, good on you.
Yeah, it's a little extra, and that's...
And he deserved
that's
it.
That's called something when you take a... Gosh, it's such a funny phrase.
As in payback is a something? Is that the phrase you're looking for?
Like an annoyance fee.
Ah, okay,
you know,
good.
It took months of me like to track this guy down and do everything that I could. But basically, you know, did I worry about including that when I was writing the book? No, I didn't. The customer... Dave Greenberg was on parole when all that was going down. I doubt he'd involved the police in the whereabouts of his illegal gambling money.
mentioning his name. All right, good.
Well, still very brave, Brett.
Now,
thank you.
The book is a fun read, but do you think it's educational to today's sports better? And if so, how?
Now, that's a good question. I think it is educational. I think, you know, every time I do a reading in New York, like some young guy will come up to me afterward and be like, I have a $19,000 bankroll. Do you think I can make it in Vegas? And it's like, well, you know, I think, you know.
Did you tell him about BobDancer.com when he does that? Go ahead.
But I think what stands out in my favorite are the descriptions of what it's like to be a sports gambler on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
You know, the grind, the pressure, the shady elements you expose yourself to no matter how much integrity you have as a gambler and a businessman. The difficulty of hiding money, the gray areas of the law, how they're always changing. All of that can be overwhelming, and you have to really love what you do and be exceptionally good at what you do to really experience the payoff in that business.
It's just like ours. You know, it's really a lot more work than what people want. You know, they always want me to tell them the secret. And yeah, you know, how do you always answer that question? I'd be curious. Do people ask you that? Just can you tell me quickly what's the secret?
Yeah, tell me quick how I can make $1 million.
Everyone always asks, you know, are the games fixed?
Oh.
I think a lot of people think that or assume that, and you know, games are like rare. You know, once every 6 or 7 or 8 years, some kind of game will be fixed. And so, no, it's like gamblers aren't looking for a fixed game. You know, that's like the least of what they're doing. And, you know, actually when they find out that a game has been fixed, they're pretty angry about it because they think they're playing on a fair playing field.
What's the learning time to do what you do? What was the learning time to do what you do?
To do what she did in the book.
Yes.
Do what I did.
Kind of learn on the job as she wrote it.
I mean, it took me 2 years to get up to speed and probably 4 years to learn everything I know now, you know, back then. I'd put it roughly, professional video poker, what we do for a living, I'd put it right about playing piano at bar player level. So how would you rank your ex-profession as far as difficulty level?
As being at the bookie level or at the team level or at the assistant level? Now, she was an assistant level in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, it was just learn as you go. But to be her boss, to be Dink, or there was another one she worked for later.
Well, both. I'd like
to know
both.
Who were really bright people who spent a long time doing this.
Right. But I think, you know, it just, I mean, when I went offshore, the stuff I was learning about, you know, running an offshore business, that took a long time to learn, you know, because you're basically, but it's different. I wasn't really dealing with gambling stuff. I was working with getting computers set up in another country, doing bank wires, you know, dealing with, you know, the politics of hiring locals and Americans and all of that kind of stuff. That took a really, I should have gotten an MBA before I did that. I mean, that was really difficult stuff. But, like, you know, being an assistant, learning how to detect line changes, line moves, that probably took about 4 or 5 months.
Uh-huh. Now, the characters in your book are miserable people. They always end up with you, but you always end up with bosses that have hearts of gold and forgave everybody for stealing from them. Now, my gambler friends aren't as miserable as the people in your book, and my bosses haven't been quite so generous. Now, how much of this were you exaggerating in the book to make up just a good story, and how much did you really find these people that miserable or in that hearts of gold?
I mean, the story is very accurate. 6 months before the book was published, I let every character read a copy, you know, to check for inaccuracies and to see how they were going to be depicted and all of that. So I covered myself on that end, and it was very important for me to capture the spirit of all the people I came into contact with, all the people who populate Lady the Favorite. But I think they are often miserable, but I also think they are intelligent and passionate people who have lived life on their own terms, and I find that very inspiring. I mean, they're not these happy-go-lucky guys. I think happy-go-lucky guys are pretty dull.
And they were rich.
You'd love Frank.
Bob. So these were rich, unhappy people, though, weren't they?
Well, some were workers.
certainly I would think, God, if I had the money they did, I would be so happy.
No, it doesn't work like that.
Right. It doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't work that way at all. I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the show before, but I lived as a kid on what's called the Miracle Mile down in Palm Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. So my neighbors were the Pulitzers, the Posts, the Kennedys. And one of the things that really surprised me was, except for my family, these families, which all had more money than we did, were not happy. They were not happy people.
Yeah. I know. It's interesting when you realize that when you're young, because you do think if you had more money, you would think life would be so easier. But, you know, it's not.
No, it almost seems to magnify the problems, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, it's gambling. It's like when you do start to go on a losing streak, it can be really, you get a lot of anxiety and you just don't know when you're going to win again. And these are middle-aged guys, you know, and the business is changing and technology is becoming more important. They're becoming dinosaurs. It's
sounds
very
stressful. Like video poker.
Feel like they
you go through those same emotions.
You took out your frustrations boxing, though, apparently. Was that correct?
I did. I definitely, you know, being in the office, you know, they work like 16, 17 hours a day, and then they would just eat junk food and go home. I really could not live that kind of lifestyle. So I started boxing to just exercise and get rid of all my energy.
I just can't. I mean, I've seen photos of you on the web, and I just can't picture you as a boxer.
Golden gloves boxer.
I know. I wasn't a very good one.
And with your sweet little voice, too. You know?
You've got to be writing a second book.
Mike Tyson has a sweet voice.
Okay, good point.
All right, good. You bite ears. All right, you must be writing a second book. Now, is it going to be a sequel in the continuing saga of Beth Raymer's life, or is it a totally different subject?
Yeah, I'm working on my second book, but it's a novel. It's not a sequel of any sort. I don't think it's going to be a long time before I write nonfiction ever again.
Okay. And before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to tell us, website-wise, appearances, things like that? Before we let you go.
No, I don't have a website. I don't do anything on the computer.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Oh, good. That's something else, Frank. I'll happy to tell you. All right.
You're just more mystifying by the moment.
Beth, thank you very much. Beth Raymer, Lay the Favorite. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Beth.
Bye.
We have one more commercial that we have to get to before we go. And no, we don't have one more commercial. Or one of our other sponsors is videopoker.com, and Greg Brown will be here next week in studio telling us what's new and different. They're launching a brand new feature to videopoker.com. He's going to tell us about it next week. Also next week we have Mark Liparelli, the chairman of the Gaming Control Board.
Woohoo!
We have lots of questions to ask him. If you have any additional questions you'd like to ask, consider sending them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com.
We're going to be doing the Barbara Walters on that one, though, the big questions. We got some juicy ones for him.
Yeah, like how do you make sure it's fair? And if you get into some kind of dispute to a casino, what's the process to do about it? And what's the gaming control business
all about?
How
they punish casinos for misbehavior, all that stuff.
Yeah. Good. So all those kind of questions we'll have, and the best question on gambling with, we're going to give a gold membership to videopoker.com.
I just realized we forgot to do our giveaways this week. I have the audio copy of Michael Connick's book, The Smart Money, and I also have the Lay the Favorite book. We will give those away, plus next week's gifts on next week's show.
Right, because we're just about out of time now.
We're not perfect.
Some of us less so than others, and I don't know which way that goes.
You're looking at me again.
It's a small studio. Somebody asked me in a note about seniors promotion, and they said they can't possibly compete with me on a seniors promotion because I play too much. And my thought was, consider playing it like at Orleans. At Orleans, if you play the 25th person
that's
gets the big prize. So
tonight's
thank you very much.
Tonight's show was lovingly crafted with only the freshest organic ingredients and is free from MSG and artificial color. It was ruminated in the second stomach of a free-range bison and then regurgitated into an open-air pit where it was allowed to ferment with limbic yeast for 3 days before being heated by a hickory wood fire in a copper pot and distilled into our show. No children or animals were harmed during tonight's broadcast. But tune in next week, or the puppy gets it. For an archived version of tonight's show, you can visit ProgressiveVP.com and BobDancer.com. The sponsors for the show are the South Point, the Palms, and Silverton Hotel and Casinos, as well as Dottie's and the website videopoker.com. Thanks for listening, and tune in next Thursday night at 7 for our next rigidly scheduled period of total spontaneity.
Hi, this is the Jazz Queen. Join me Thursday, February 24th at 9 o'clock p.m. for the debut of the Jazz Queen Show. I will introduce you to new and up-and-coming smooth jazz artists and update you on smooth jazz news. I look forward to bringing you the absolute best in smooth jazz with a sprinkling of smooth R&B, all chosen and played for your listening pleasure here on KLAV 1230 and online at klav1230am.com. Until then, keep it smooth.
I'm Duke Liberatore.
And I'm Dr. Jan McBaron.
If you want the prescription for feeling happy, healthy, and terrific,
listen to our health talk show, Duke and the Doctor.
Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 a.m. on the Talk of Las Vegas, AM 1230 KLAV.
I'm Mark.
Listen up.
And I'm Jessica.
Word up.
And we're the Jerks.
Keep it real.
We've got the Jerk Show every Tuesday through Saturday right here on KLAV AM 1230.
West Side.
Listen every day and your life will be enriched.
With 10 gigawatts of radio waves that won't behave.
Or you'll go insane.
I'm not listening to you. You're crazy.
Yeah, that too. Midnight to 3 on the Talk of Las Vegas.
Howard Dean, that former Vermont governor here, there have been two commissions talking about debt and deficit reduction. Do you think the two parties will move close enough to make real progress on that?
I think we've got to get through this horrible partisan stuff first. Basically, this is one of those ones where, politically speaking, you got to hold hands and jump off the bridge together.
Hi, everyone. It's Ron Insana. Put your money down on the Insana Quotient every Monday through Friday morning, 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. on Las Vegas' number one talk station, KLAV, AM 1230.
Hi, I'm Duke Liberatore.
And I'm Dr. Jan McBaron.
We are a husband and wife team.
And together, we host the number one health talk show in the nation,
Duke and the Doctor.
You can hear our show weekdays from 6 to 8 a.m. here on KLAV 1230 a.m.
We'll discuss up-to-date health news, give away gifts, share in a laugh or two, and answer health questions from our callers.
Feel happy, healthy, and terrific when you tune in to Duke and the Doctor.
Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 a.m. on KLAV 1230 a.m., the Talk of Las Vegas.
My name is Jeffrey Burke, and I'm the host of the Staying Healthy Show here on KLAV. The Staying Healthy Show is now on KLAV 10 times per week. 10 times for you to hear the best guest in the industry and learn about the best nutritional products available for your good health. You can hear my show weekday mornings at 8 and a new show again at 5. Both shows are drive time for your listening pleasure. The show is sponsored by Stay Healthy Health Food Store, located at 840 South Rancho Drive in the Rancho Town and Country Center on the northwest corner of Charleston and Rancho. The hours of the store are Monday through Friday from 9 to 7 p.m., Saturdays 9 to 6, and closed on Sundays. Wayne Rudolph built his store with three principles in mind: great products and selection, a knowledgeable staff, and memorable service every time you visit his store. Please tune into the Staying Healthy Show 10 times per week here on KLAV. I'm looking forward to chatting with all of you and helping you get healthy, be healthy, and stay healthy.
Talova Lava Samoa, Tautai Polynesia radio program is now serving our Samoan community here in Las Vegas. Enjoy this top quality program coming to you live from KLAV, 1230 a.m. every Sunday. Listen to your own language, your own music, and all the information about your Polynesian event. All the news from your homeland and locally here. Don't forget to tune in at KLAV, 1230 a.m. from 8 p.m. every Sunday.
Hi, I'm Lexi Kapp, owner and founder of Nannies and Housekeepers USA.
And I'm Lexi's sidekick, Mama Rita.
Rita and I will be hosting a new one-hour show every Thursday morning at 9 called Moments You Remember. We'll be taking your calls live and answering questions on the air regarding Nannies and Housekeepers USA services, of course, but also discussing life in general.
And we'll be surprising you with special guests.
Whether it's taking care of your child or providing care for your elderly parents, those are special moments. Moments You Remember, Thursday morning at 9.
Hi,
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood of The Stones for Rad. You know it's okay to rock and roll and party, because I do it all the time. Just let someone else do the driving. That's what I do. Remember, rock lives, and you should too. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S.
The thing is, Bob, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
You're listening to KLAV Las Vegas.
Views and opinions.